Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Ben Zimmer is the name of the new on-language columnist at the New York Times Magazine. Of course, William Safire started the column back in 1979. He died in September. Ben Zimmer joins me now to talk about where he'll take the on-language column. Welcome to WNYC, and congratulations on your new gig.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian.
And the on-language column appearing in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine is about, well, the big headline word is no. But I think it's really about two words, isn't it?
That's right. I talk about yes and no, which are pretty much the most basic words that we have in the English language. A lot of us learn no as the first word that that we learn as babies. But yes and no seem like they're locked in the struggle where they're embodying these larger forces. So you can talk about getting to yes, and we hear that now with the healthcare debate, with Democrats trying to figure out a way to get this through. They talk about getting to yes.
Or you can talk about the party of no.
Exactly. And so I talk about party of no with a sort of a Safire-style tour of the history of party of no, going all the way back to Ronald Reagan in 1988, using it to describe the Democrats. And since then, it's gone back and forth. Whoever's in charge gets to call the other party the party of no.
And Nancy Reagan, who said, just say no, which is considered a positive thing.
That's true. Obviously, no can be used in all these different ways. And in fact, we see Republicans trying to use no and sort of reclaim it, where Mitt Romney says, you know, that it's fine to be the party of no if we're saying no to bad things. Or Pete Sessions saying, sure, we're the party of no. We're the party of K-N-O-W. So doing a little playful spin on the phrase.
And you mentioned that no is one of the first words that English speakers learn as children. Not true in other languages, do you know?
I've seen a few studies and sort of cross-cultural, cross-linguistic studies of the words that that children use. Actually, no might not be the very first word that English speakers tend to learn, but it's certainly in the first group of words that come. But there's actually a surprising overlap with the types of words that get learned very early on with language acquisition.
And listeners, we have about 10 minutes for you to call in and talk to Ben Zimmer, the new on-language columnist for the New York Times Magazine. You could call in and talk about your relationship with the word no or the word yes, or maybe you have a favorite word or phrase that has entered into political discourse recently that you want to hear Ben Zimmer analyze, either off the top of his head right now or maybe take a note for a future column, or anything that's making you scratch your head about the English language that you would like Ben to take a look at, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You've got big shoes to fill.
Yes, indeed. I'm quite aware of just how big those shoes are. I grew up reading William Safire from the age of maybe 9 or 10. I read the on-language column religiously. I even wanted to write in at that young age, although I couldn't quite work up the nerve. I actually wanted to disagree with him. I can't even remember what it was about, but I wanted to make my opinion known. I couldn't quite work up the nerve, but many years later, I was able to have a correspondence with him, and we were often in touch over the past several years.
Do you see going about it the same way, doing it in some different way that's particularly you?
Well, obviously, I could never really be Safire with his very distinctive voice and personality coming through in everything that he wrote. I do want to continue some of the themes that that ran through his 30 years of writing the column. I'm certainly very interested in political language, which, of course, was Safire's bread and butter. But I really like to cast my net as widely as I can and look at all sorts of different usage that's out there. And I'll be bringing in references to pop culture, technology, just literature, all sorts of things that strike my fancy and just interesting ways that the language is developing.
And I see that the first listener question, I should say reader question, that someone sent in that you have selected to answer is, if avuncular means like an uncle, what word means like an aunt? Have you published the answer to this yet?
This actually has just been published today. This is a nice thing that I
On the Times website?
That's right. That's right. This is an online-only feature that we're starting, and today's the first opportunity that I have to answer a reader question. So I'm writing the column every other week, and in those weeks, I will pick a question to answer. This was a great one about what is the counterpart for avuncular, and there really is not a decent word in English that has succeeded in the same way as avuncular. There are words like antly or antish or ant-like, where you're just putting a suffix onto ant. If you go the Latin route, like avuncular coming from the Latin word for uncle, there are possibilities like materturl, which is a word that actually appears in the OED,
that'll
the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah, that'll be popular.
and also amital, coming from amata, another word for aunt. That's the father's sister as opposed to the mother's sister, since Latin had different words for different sides of the family.
Well, you know what we do around here when there's no good word for something? We make one up.
That's an excellent
so
thing to do.
So, listeners, on our comments page for this segment, and we'll forward it to Ben, propose your word to be the female equivalent of avuncular. If avuncular means like an uncle, what word would you coin to mean like an aunt? Think about it. You can post it all day, all weekend to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you'll see our Talking About Language page, and you can suggest your own word, and who knows, maybe Ben will even include it in some future column. Allison in Garrison, you're on WNYC with Ben Zimmer. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Ooh, I'm echoing. I was just thinking about yes and no, and let me walk. I'm sorry, I'm in an echoing.
You know what, I'm gonna get you back in a minute. I'll come back to you, I promise. Michael in Brooklyn, you're calling about no?
Yes, I am. A great many people know that one of the most famous phrases coined by William Safire was nattering nabobs of negativism when he was writing speeches for Spiro Agnew. I was wondering if this was just sort of an homage to that.
In fact, I do tip my hat to Safire in this column. If you read it, I do say that the party of no has some historical resonances with previous political rhetoric, and I do mention that famous phrase from 1970 that Safire wrote for Spiro Agnew, the nattering nabobs of negativism. One thing that Safire will always be remembered for is that phrase.
Are you as interested in politics as he was, and do you think you'll be drawing from political language as much as he did?
I'm a great fan of politics, sort of a political junkie, I guess you could say. I recently wrote for the On Language column before this official debut about another word that's seeped into politics, and that's optics, used to refer to political perceptions, how the public perceives things in that kind of PR style, and how everybody talks about the optics of political maneuvers and policies these days. So that fascinates me, but I always want to bring in other things as well. So, for instance, with the column on no, I talk about some pop cultural examples too. So, for instance, I talk about how in the movie Juno, the title character says, "That's a big fat sack of no." And I also quote a paparazzi photo blog where people are snarkily referred to as a bucket of no or a pile of no.
Manu in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I wanted to speak about no also. There are cultures and languages where you can't just come out and say no. When I worked with engineers here, if somebody came up with a new idea and you didn't think much of it, you didn't say, no, that's a bad idea. You would say, very interesting. I think in Japan, if they say, I'll think about it, it means no way, Jose. And I'm Iranian. In Farsi, you wouldn't say no, especially to somebody who is in a higher position of age or position from you. You say nacher, which means no. Kher is an Arabic word, means good things. So you would say no good things happen may happen after that.
That's great, Manu. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate the cross-cultural perspective. I have some training in linguistic anthropology, and I hope to sometimes be able to bring in that cross-cultural approach, because obviously language is always grounded in a social and cultural context, and the way it happens in other languages, other cultures, will obviously be very different.
Allison and Garrison, we'll try you again. Hi, Allison.
Sorry about that. I was literally standing in a room that was echoing.
It's better now. What's up?
Much better. I was thinking about, I hear all these things about no, and I was just thinking about the definitive effect that Yes We Can has recently had on our lives in America as Obama's campaign slogan.
Yes, being positive while trying to defeat an opposition. Do you get to yes on this at all?
Briefly refer to Yes We Can, and I say that it's not a surprise that the supporters of Obama sort of carrying over from the Yes We Can rhetoric of the campaign would now be talking about getting to yes in terms of their legislative progress. But it's interesting that a lot of that positive rhetoric works on the campaign trail, but when you're locked in the trenches, then you kind of have to go negative sometimes, and so we see this party of no label being used quite a lot against the opposition.
Joyce in Mountain Lakes, New Jersey, bemoans the loss of yes. Correct, Joyce?
Yes. I rarely hear yes being used. It's always absolutely, definitely. And I miss just plain yes. What's happened to it?
Well, I think people are always looking for new ways of saying things, and perhaps sometimes yes might seem a little too basic, perhaps, and people want to find a new way to say it, perhaps a new and more emphatic way. Absolutely, definitely, those are ways to say the same thing, to say that you're agreeing with it, but getting your point across more emphatically, although we do not want to lose sight of that basic word yes in the process.
Ben Early returns from our comments page on the female equivalent of avuncular. Maggie writes, avuncular. Cameron says something similar, avuncular, A-V-A-U-N-T-C-U-L-A-R, avuncular. And Danny from Woodbridge, ant-like equals tonsular.
Actually, that's interesting. If you take a look at my response, which is at the end of the column today on the New York Times website, William Safire was looking at this very question back in 1982, and somebody back then suggested tantular as well, using that T-A-N-T prefix, although it sounds a bit like tarantula. It's a bit spider-like, obviously.
And Gil in Belleville invented a word for something else. What is it, Gil?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We think and longer and longer life is wonderful. However, my word is panmedicide. When one works out the mathematics,
increased medical assistance.
Eventually, the younger and younger people are going to be supporting this.
Panmedicide. And we have to leave it there because we're out of time. Ben Zimmer will be appearing every other week. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
In the New York Times Magazine, beginning this Sunday. And how can they contact you online?
You can write in with questions or comments to onlanguage@nytimes.com. You can also contact me through visualthesaurus.com.
Thanks so much. Good luck. We'll be reading.
Words in papers, words in books, words on TV, words for books, words of comfort, words of...